FindTheBook.com.
Well, what's good, everybody? Thank you for joining me here on Thursday, December 22nd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here for what should be another great show. We got a couple of professional handicappers joining us today. Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com for our weekly Powers Picks segment. Then also Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. We'll chat some college basketball with him. So college football and NFL to start things off. College basketball to close up the show here today. Of course, our Friday show, our Westgate Super Contest Selection segment for Week 16 with myself and Cole Ryan, and the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Then after our segment here with Brad, I'll remind you of the changes to next week's show. But with that, let's go ahead and get into the college football action here. We'll bring in Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how are you today, my friend?
Excellent. Good to hear your voice on this fine Thursday morning.
Well, as I told you here before the show, I want to take a look at some of the bowl games that we haven't really talked about a whole lot yet. Look mostly at next week's games because we've gotten a lot of thoughts here for Friday and a little bit into Monday. But one thing I do want to talk about here, mostly because we finally have a line for this game, the Hawaii Bowl coming up on Saturday on Christmas Eve, Middle Tennessee State, a 4.5-point favorite out on the island, take on the Rainbow Warriors. Any thoughts on this game now that we've got a number for it?
Yeah, I'd slightly lean on Middle Tennessee. You know, I do think Stock still plays. I don't think it matters who plays at quarterback for Middle Tennessee. I mean, they ran Wildcat with the running back and wide receiver formations and put up 77 points against Florida Atlantic. Now, Florida Atlantic wasn't prepared for it, and obviously Hawaii will have a whole month to maybe prepare for it, but expect a lot of points there. Keep in mind, Hawaii is the worst defense as far as any of the bowl teams out there. They give up 37 points per game. And it's not like, you know, Middle Tennessee on the other side is the 1985 Bears defense. They give up nearly 35 points per game. Very capable scoring points. They average 40 points per game. Maybe a slight lean towards Middle Tennessee minus the 4.5, but the total's wrong. I jump on the over. Very soft number at 70. It won't be 70 for very long. I'm sure that this one would not be stunned if it even closed at 75. Totals are usually soft. It's way too low. Should be priced in the mid-70s. And this one, keep in mind that the last six times Hawaii's played at home in the bowl game, the average total score was 83 points per game. Both teams are combined 16-8 to the over this season. The over is the play. And at 70, the over would be one of my top overs of the early bowl season.
I guess that sort of begs the question, how close does Middle Tennessee State get to this total on its own?
I would be stunned if they were held. I would be completely stunned if they were held to point total in the 20s. But I got them scoring 43. So I think anything, completely fair game. I mean, they're going to score at least 35, but I got them scoring in the 40s. And let's be honest, Rolovich is known as an offensive coach, and he's not afraid to get creative in himself. I think Hawaii scoring in the 30s. So, I mean, I actually put the line on the game in the upper 70s. So, this is just a wrong total here. And that's what happens sometimes in bowl totals. And anyone that's paying attention now here on the 22nd, I'd bet it today because within a couple of days, the Sharps will get into it. And, yeah, I mean, this was just literally posted in the last hour. So, it's a very fresh line.
Well, and of course, if news comes out that Brent Stockstill is going to play, then I think we see a pretty immediate reaction here in the total of this one. So if you can jump on it now, you know, make sure that you do. And then it's part of the reason why it's not a bad idea to listen live. And then of course, you know, tune into the show right after it gets posted, you know, around generally 12:30 or so Eastern time for those listeners. But let's look ahead to Monday here. The St. Petersburg Bowl. This is a game we've talked about a lot here on the show, Miami of Ohio, Mississippi State. And again, I'm going to keep harping on this because this is one of those games that you really have to think about during bowl season because one team is clearly more talented, but they may not have the motivation to show up.
Well, I think they do have the motivation to show up. I mean, if you at least read the press clippings, they were excited to be there. And keep in mind, 5-7 team, you thought, they don't deserve a bowl, but 5-7 teams last year in bowl games were 3-0 straight up, 3-0 against the spread. So I think they have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And I just think, look, I mean, there's currently a talent disparity between the two teams. But I also think it's a terrible matchup, and it comes directly from Mississippi State's quarterback, Nick Fitzgerald. I mean, this is a guy that threw for nearly 2,300 yards, 21 touchdowns, only 10 interceptions, and ran for 1,200 yards, and averaged in the SEC play a quarterback 7 yards per carry. He's the real deal, and in fact, he probably weighs more than half of Miami Ohio's linebackers. Miami Ohio, great story, first team ever to go from 0-6 to a bowl game, but the reality is, and I'm a MAC guy, I'm a MAC alumnus, one of the schools there. I mean, since 2008, current run for MAC schools in bowl games, 15-32 against the spread, 32%. SEC teams usually do well in the bowl games. I know they've had a down year, but this is one time where I'm not afraid of laying it and playing it. I know this will be the Joe Public side of things, but it's under 2 touchdowns. I'm going to lay it with Mississippi State minus 13.5. I think they blow out Miami Ohio.
I wonder how long that 13.5 that's sitting out there at the Chris book sticks around. I mean, this one probably closes 14.5, 15, I would think, right?
Well, I'll be honest with you. There was buyback on Miami Ohio yesterday because it was 14 in a lot of shops yesterday and a lot more 13.5s out there today. But, you know, let's face it, everything that I've been reading public, 80 to 90% of the bowl game action is going to come on probably game day. So the public's going to bet Mississippi State. Yeah, I get it now. You're right. It's going to go to the 14.5, but there has been some sharp action on Miami Ohio. And then what happened actually yesterday, because there was a lot more 14s than 13.5s yesterday, and yet 13.5 is the consensus number right now.
Well, move down the slate for Monday here. The Quick Lane Bowl, Maryland, Boston College, not exactly a pretty one. If you like points, this is most certainly not the game for you. But Maryland's a one-point favorite here for this game at Ford Field in Detroit. So fast track, it is inside. How do you see this one breaking down?
Yeah, I'm not going to get involved. I mean, a lot of people are going to want to bet the under, but I'm not going to get involved in that. In fact, you know, I think if you want to be a contrarian, the over might not be too bad there. But, you know, I like Boston College. I think the wrong team's favored. And let me first say this. You know, Maryland's a completely different team with Perry Hills at quarterback. And I boosted him up at the end of the season a couple of points because of that, because he's healthy here. But even with that being said, I got the better defense here, clearly the better defense in Boston College. And while neither team has a win over a winning FBS team this year, that shows you that there might be too many bowl games. But, you know, I look at Boston College's performance in the last month of the season. They did beat both NC State and Wake Forest, two bowl teams, on the road outright as underdogs. And I also look at Maryland, how they done against bowl teams this year. How about 0-7 against the spread, getting outgained by nearly 200 yards per game? That's by far the worst mark of any of this year's 80 bowl teams. Wrong team favorite, give me Boston College plus the points.
The Camping World Independence Bowl here, North Carolina State, Vanderbilt, this one in Shreveport, Louisiana. This is a bowl game that's not really getting a whole lot of love, but I actually think it's a pretty good matchup.
Yeah, it's a solid matchup. I think, you know, if you look at the performances of the two teams in their regular season finale, I mean, they got outright upset wins over their main rivals, North Carolina State, you know, arguably saving their coach's job by pulling the double-digit upset over North Carolina. And then you look at Vanderbilt pulling the outright upset, actually back-to-back ones over Mississippi and Tennessee to get into a bowl game there. Offensively, very strong performance the last two games, over 1,000 yards of offense in those couple of games. Their quarterback, Shermer, got hot at the end of the year. You know, you look at Vanderbilt, I think there's a hidden deep dive stat here that a lot of people aren't going to talk about, but let's face it, you got a total sitting in the mid-40s, so I mean, the expectation is at least that it's going to be limited scoring, and yet I have a team that's number one in the country in red zone defense. They only allow scoring on 66% of the drives into the red zone. That is number one in the entire country. And then you flip over to the offense, it's number two in the country. They score on 96% of their drives in the red zone. So I got a very good team. They're the best team in the country in the red zone. When you combine the two, offense and defense, points will be at a premium. I want the team that can capitalize on their limited scoring opportunities. And I also want the team to hold the opposition to field goals. So, and then, you know, as far as an ATS stat, you know, Vanderbilt and underdog, each of their last 9 games against FBS opponents this year had a solid 6-3 against the spread market, and more importantly, pulled 4 outright upsets. Give me Vanderbilt plus the points here. I'd shop around. You can get a 4.5 out there at a couple different spots. 4 is probably more of the consensus number, but obviously shop around, look for the better number. Vanderbilt plus 4.5 is the play.
Well, move to Tuesday here. We got a noon kickoff that's actually a rematch of a game that happened earlier this season, and I believe this is the only game That is a rematch during the bowl season. But Army takes on North Texas in the heart of Dallas Bowl at the Cotton Bowl. Army's big chalk here in this game, even though they lost to North Texas earlier this year.
Yeah, and look, there's about 900 football games played during a regular season. I could have gave you at least 500 guesses that if there was going to be a bowl rematch this year, what would it be? And I think I safely could say that you would not pick Army North Texas out of any of those 500 guesses in this one. But, yeah, it is a bowl rematch. Another instance that there's maybe too many bowl games. I don't think there's too many bowl games. That gives me a chance to bet more and handicap more on college football, a sport I love the most. So I'm all in favor of having 100 bowl games if we could have them. But you look at this matchup. Obviously, North Texas pulled the outright upset, 18-point underdog, won 35-17. However, very misleading game. There are plus six turnovers in that game. North Texas, not a good look. I mean, the lowest power-rated team that I have out of any in the bowl action for this year. 5-7. Now, they had a great season. Keep in mind, the expectations were so low at North Texas this year. You know, the opening South Point number as far as their season win total was 2. That was, you know, bottom 3-4 teams in the country as far as a season win total for them. And they weren't favored in too many games this year. In fact, they're only favored in 2, one of them being the finale, which wasn't a good look against UTEP. You know, Army, I would be very worried about Army here because, you know, if it wasn't for the revenge angle, I got to think, I mean, they're coming off one of their biggest wins in the last 2 decades, finally ending the losing streak against Navy. If they weren't playing North Texas, I would be all against Army in the bowl game here. But, you know, looking at the matchup, getting double digits, I think North Texas has extra time to prep for an option offense that they've already faced. And this is the first time in school history that Army is a favorite in a bowl game. Give me North Texas plus the points. And also, I'll lean towards the over. I think the total is a little cheap there at 49. Probably should be, in my opinion, priced around 52.
Well, of course, North Texas playing fairly close to home here in Dallas as well. So maybe that's something that does help them out a little bit. Here's a game that, you know, not that anyone really cares too much about my best bet of the bowl season, but this is one that I thought, you know, when it was sitting there in the 13.5, 14 range, this was probably the best bet of the bowl season. And then it also helps that Matt Rhule decided to take the job at Baylor. But that's Wake Forest and Temple. Right now, we've got Temple about an 11.5-point favorite out there in the marketplace. But how do you see this one? Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I gave it out way early, over a week ago, as my bowl best bet on a couple of podcasts that I did at 13.5. I still gave it out yesterday on my newsletter as one of my top bowl plays at, you know, 12 it was at certain spots. And I think there continues to be value anything above 11. Not sure if it's going to be 11.5 soon because – I think if it's handicap, bowl handicapping 101, it doesn't get much better than this. For starters, is Temple excited to be here? I don't know if they are. They just played in the stadium a couple weeks back in the American Athletic Conference championship game. And you would think a team that, you know, has won 10 games, covered 12 in a row, and that's why the line is where it's at, because they've covered incredibly 12 straight games. You thought they'd have probably gotten a warmer weather bowl site, but that wasn't the case this year. No, Wake Forest is excited to be in a bowl game. I mean, this is their first bowl game in 5 years, first under this coaching staff. And Wake Forest is a team you can't lay too many points against. I mean, it's a team that only gives up 22 points per game. I know offensively they leave a lot to be desired, but Wolford, the quarterback, is going to be healthier. The underdog was 9-3 against the spread in Wake Forest games this year. The Demon Deacons 5-1 against the spread in the underdog role. Can't lay double digits with Temple. I would not be stunned at an outright upset here, and I'm going to take Wake Forest plus the points. Fully agree with you. At 13.5, that would have been my bowl game of the year.
Well, here's a game that has a lot going on. The Holiday Bowl in San Diego between Minnesota and Washington State. We've seen pretty much one-sided money along with a line adjustment because of some suspensions that were announced for Minnesota. But this game is kind of a mess to try and handicap here at this point because not only has the value gone from Washington State, and there was value at the opening number, to be sure. But now, I mean, what do you do with this game sitting at double digits?
Oh, I'll have a Minnesota ticket at 10.5, which seems to be, you know, some of the consensus number right now. I'm not afraid of it. I'm not going to have a big bowl bet. I mean, I obviously, you know, Wake Forest, I like a heck of a lot more. I like Boston College more, and clearly I like Mississippi State a heck of a lot more. But I like to have a little action on the bowl games, isolated games. I don't mind. I'll be Joe Public liking to have at least a little bit of action on it. And, you know, let's talk about Minnesota. Everyone's going to throw them in the trash, 10 suspended players. only two of them were starters. Now, keep in mind, two of those starters were in the secondary. That's not a good look when you're facing Washington State's high-powered pass offense. But, you know, I think it's an us-against-the-world type of mentality. Keep in mind that the coach came out, supported the players. I think he gets a lot of value in the locker room there. I think they'll play extremely hard for him. And keep in mind, Washington State, 3-7 against the number as a bowl favorite. That is their head coach, Mike Leach, dating back to his Texas Tech days. And I even got a Holiday Bowl stat for you. You'll like this, Adam. The underdog in the Holiday Bowl, 19-3 against the spread the last 22. You know, it's one of those that I don't know if it means a lot, but it's almost too big of a spread, too big of a number and too big of a spread here not to pay attention to it at least. And you look at Minnesota, I know they haven't faced a lot of high-powered passing attacks, but I just look at their body of work. This is a team here that doesn't have a, you know, you look at three of their four losses were by 7 points or less, and the 14-point loss to Wisconsin was misleading because they actually led that game going into the fourth quarter. So this is a team that hasn't been blown out by anybody all year. They play defense. They run the football. That's got to be the game plan here to keep Washington State off the field. Give me Minnesota plus the 10.5. I'll be contrarian and play against the massive line move.
Is this one that you would grab at 10.5 because you think you'll see some sharp buyback, or do you feel like, you know, waiting until December 27th, you may catch 11.5 if you're patient?
You know, I know this is going to be a 1990s probably type of take here, but, you know, I still see it to this day. If you want to bet favorites in bowl action, bet them early. You want to bet dogs, bet them late. I'll have them, you know, I'm not afraid to have a Minnesota ticket plus 10.5, but if you're a guy that's looking for the absolute best number, sure, I'd wait until game day. I would not be stunned if it went up because the public perception is all they've seen the last 2 weeks on Minnesota is all this drama and stuff, and that's just going to be the perception of this game. I would not be stunned to see Washington State move to the 11, and we'll see. There just hasn't been any Minnesota buyback whatsoever at this point.
Well, and of course, as this situation sort of plays itself out, maybe more people will come out of the woodwork, so to speak, to back this Minnesota team. And like you, you know, I think that they do have a motivational angle here because the coach came out and supported his team. And I think that's something that's big, not only in this game, but also going forward to possibly make them a fairly live dog when they play some of the better teams in the Big Ten next season. How about the Motel 6 Cactus? Chase Field in Phoenix, Arizona, Boise State, Baylor, Boise State laying 7.5 out there, depending on where you look. What do you see from this one?
I won't have – this will be another one where I won't have a big bet. I mean, both teams – I'd love to sell both teams because, the boy, combined against the spread, 6 and 18 against the spread this year, these two teams. And, you know, obviously Baylor, a horrible look after starting 6-0. They go 0-6. They're the antithesis of Miami, Ohio, losing their last six games. I give them credit that they had five straight ATS losses, and a lot of people played against them in the West Virginia game, and heck, they almost pulled the outright upset, so at least they didn't quit in the finale. You know, the Linwood, the running back's not going to play here. There's some breaking news about recruiting violations and stuff like that, so it's going to be a very tough pill to swallow here, but boy, at 7.5, I would take Baylor. And let's talk Boise State. Just not overwhelming like they have been in recent years. They only outscored their opponents by 13 points per game. I mean, some of the better Boise teams were racking up, you know, three touchdowns, even 25 points per game scoring differential on this season. They didn't have a lot of blowouts. And it's also a team that was favored in all 12 of their games and, you know, only covered three of them. So not a great favorite. And, boy, if you just go – and I do this for every single bowl game. I do a checklist at every single position, and I only came out with Boise State around 4 here. And usually that checklist is very close to the line and more often than not. So at 7.5, give me a Baylor ticket, but that'll be what I call pizza money. And we're not talking, you know, fancy restaurant in New York or Chicago or, you know, a Chicago deep dish large pizza. This is more your $5 hot and ready Little Caesars ticket here on Baylor plus the points.
Well, let's move to Wednesday here. We'll introduce some bowl games we haven't really talked about yet on the show, starting with the Pinstripe Bowl, cold weather bowl here at Yankee Stadium between Pitt and Northwestern, where we see Pitt up to a 5.5-point favorite here in this one. And I don't think that this line movement is a big surprise.
No, I mean, the money being on Pittsburgh, I mean, people love offense. Pittsburgh's got offense, 42 points per game. a little note, Matt Canada, who is off to LSU as the offense coordinator, is staying on to coach this game. That is critical because I was going to have a pretty substantial Northwestern ticket, and I still lean with Northwestern, but that did affect me a little bit. If he's gone, I mean, that would have been a major negative for Pittsburgh if he's not calling the plays. But, you know, you look at the game here, you know, Pittsburgh's a team that the only team in the country that can say they beat not one but two actual conference champs as far as the Power Five conference champs. They beat the Big Ten champ Penn State, beat the ACC champ in Clemson. But, you know, defensively is a concern for me. It's tough to lay too many points with a defense that gives up 36 points per game. Stunning considering that Narduzzi's track record was strong defensive play at Michigan State. Northwestern's got by far the better defense. And offensively, they're sneaky good, especially in the passing game this year. They got one of the best wide receivers in the Big Ten in Austin Carr, not to be confused with Mr. Cleveland basketball, Austin Carr out of Notre Dame there. But, you know, you look at Northwestern's passing game, you know, it was one of the worst in the country last year. Well, this year, they're averaging 248 yards per game. Why do I bring it up? Because Pittsburgh has arguably the worst passing defense in the country. They give up 343 yards per game. That's not a good look here. And you look at, you know, Northwestern's pass defense, you know, only gave up 11 touchdown passes, 13 interceptions. Not too shabby. Got the better defense. I'm getting the points. Fitzgerald is usually a good bowl underdog. He's 4-2 against the number. Pittsburgh is a terrible favorite, 6-14 against the number. Is their last 20 games is a favorite. Northwestern as an underdog, 10-5 against the number. Their last 15 in that role. Add it all up. Give me Northwestern plus 5.5. Would not be stunned at an outright upset. Total, I mean, obviously people are going to want to bet the over, 11 straight overs for Pittsburgh games. Priced at 65.5. It's actually, you know, outside of the Syracuse game, one of their highest totals of the season. I'm not touching the total until I get a weather forecast for that game because 65.5 could be a little too much. You could have wind, you could have snow, and I don't want to have a 65.5 total if that's the case.
I actually sat next to Austin Carr, the former basketball player, on a flight back from Vegas one time. Couldn't have been a nicer guy. He was actually very, very nice. It was a red eye, though, so I didn't bother him too much. But Yankee Stadium weather, the very, 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 very extended forecast says sunny and a high near 40, but obviously we'll have to play it by ear here because there aren't a whole lot of these cold weather bowl games. So we'll see if there's going to be wind as a factor, maybe the precipitation forecast changes, all that different type of stuff. But, Brad, I totally agree with you in terms of the total for this game. How about we go to the Russell Athletic Bowl? This is a really, really good matchup. I think one of the best matchups we'll talk about here on today's show. West Virginia and Miami down in Orlando. Got Miami the 2.5 or 3-point favorite out there, depending on where you look.
Yeah, I'm going to back Miami here. And it's just, you know, I really respect Mark Richt. A lot of people are down on him. But, you know, ask Georgia fans right now, at least after year one, what their opinion on Mark Richt, a guy they ran out of town for winning 9-10 games every year. Wasn't a good look for Georgia football this year. Was a pretty decent look for Miami, Florida. Kind of an up-and-down season. They won and covered their first four games. Then they lost four straight and failed to cover four straight games. But they had a couple of close losses there against Florida State, North Carolina, and Notre Dame. You know, and not too bad there as far as total performance. You know, it's a young team that got much stronger as the season went on. You know, four straight wins, four straight covers. Blew out Pittsburgh. I thought they had two solid back-to-back road performances at Virginia and NC State. Look, and not world beaters, but, you know, they won the game comfortably in both and then blew out Duke in the finale. So good-looking Miami team here, and it's only going to get better as they progress in the Mark Richt era. You know, West Virginia had a great season. I don't think anyone in the country had them going 10-2 straight up. You know, defensively, they were very young, but they performed quite well. I'd argue that they were the best defense in the Big 12, but it's a little bit of a different style of offense that they're going to be facing here. You know, Miami can really, you know, pound on you. They got some big guys up front, and they also have some big guys up front on the defensive line. Then get after the passer. You know, Mark Richt's been pretty good in bowl games, 9-5 straight up, nothing to sneeze at there. I'm going to take Miami. As long as I'm getting 2.5, I'm going to lay it with the Hurricanes. You know, it's in Orlando. Miami's not known as a team that's going to travel well. But I do give them a little bit of slight crowd edge here. I think they do travel a little bit here because I think there's overall excitement for the program and the future of it.
Well, and something I'm a little bit surprised that you didn't mention and something I think is a really strong case for Miami here is that Brad Kaya has not been healthy all season long. And now he's had more – he'll by the time this game kicks off, a little more than a month to get back into decent shape. And we really haven't seen this Miami offense with a healthy Brad Kaya in quite some time. So I think that's something that really, really benefits them here as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And, boy, it's stunning that with all the quarterbacks they had a hell of a run there in the 80s with quarterbacks. But he is already the all-time career passing leader, and he's still got a year of eligibility. You're exactly right. And he still had a decent season. I mean, 23 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, nothing bad here. And another factor I didn't mention, you know, Miami's got one of the better special teams in the entire country at every single level, whether it's the kicking game, the return game. And they have a huge edge here. And when you got a short line and you're looking for all the advantage that you can get, well, Miami's just got the better quarterback, the better special teams, the better head coach, a little bit of crowd edge here. I like Miami and like them a lot.
Well, go to the Foster Farms Bowl here between Indiana and Utah. And this is one of those bowl betting 101 types of games where you've got an Indiana team here. They fire Kevin Wilson. Well, Kevin Wilson resigns, use the air quotes on that. But Tom Allen takes over, was the defensive coordinator. Now he gets the full-time job. Indiana's catching 7 or 7.5. It doesn't seem like there's been a whole lot of people invested in Utah here in the early bowl betting action. But when you look at Utah, you know, Kyle Whittingham is a phenomenal head coach, got a brilliant record in bowl games. I'm sure you have that information right in front of you. But how motivated are the Utes to play this game?
Yeah, I mean, there's a question there. And maybe you get a bump for Indiana because, you know, Tom Allen did a wonderful job. I mean, he was one of the finalists for the Frank Broyles Award. And let's break it down what he did defensively this year. They allowed less than, you know, 10 points per game, less than what they did last year. Their yards per game allowed dropped 136 yards per game. So massive improvements on that side of the ball for Indiana this year. And one of the major reasons why he's now got the full gig there. Yeah, as far as best bowl coaches in the country, I think it's Urban Meyer one, and it's Kyle Whittingham number two. 8-1 straight up, 7-2 against the number. I mean, take it back further, Utah is 11-1 straight up, 10-2 against the spread their last 12 bowl games. Best mark of any team in the country. I can tell you one of the biggest bettors in Vegas, I'm not going to name names, but he's all in with a best bet on Indiana in this one. He took Indiana plus 8. I'm kind of neutral on the game. At the current 7 number, I think I would lean with Utah minus the points. I like the significant coaching edge here with a guy that's one of the best bowl coaches that there is out there against the guys coaching his first game. You know, Utah's got a little bit of the running back edge there with Williams really coming on strong down the edge. I think they got the edge at the line of scrimmage on the offense and defensive lines. They have by far a huge special teams edge. Again, Utah, one of the best special teams groups in the entire country like they are each and every year. So when you add it all up at the current 7 number, I'll have a small bet on Utah minus the points.
Well, one more game to talk about here on Wednesday, and then I want to touch briefly on a couple of these Thursday games since we won't have you back on the show again until next Thursday. The Advocare Texas Bowl, Texas A&M, Kansas State, not a real exciting matchup because, you know, both of these teams used to be in the Big 12 and would play each other fairly often, but now Texas A&M in the SEC, Kansas State, Bill Snyder, we all know what that's all about. A&M's laying, this number's anywhere from 2 to 3 out there in the marketplace, so it seems like, you know, there are a lot of differing opinions here on this game.
Yeah, it's a tough one to handicap because I'll be honest with you. Going into it, I fully expected that I would be on Kansas State. I want to bet Kansas State. I love Bill Snyder, but, you know, while he's a Hall of Fame coach in the regular season and he's one of the best all time in what he's done there, I got to say it. He's an overrated bowl coach. In fact, he's a poor bowl coach. Last 9 bowl games, 1-8 straight up, 1-8 against the spread. And then you factor in the SEC against the Big 12 in bowl games, 14-2 against the spread. Basically, you got a more talented team with the speed edge, and that is the case here. You know, Texas A&M, I think it's a relatively short number because this is a Texas A&M team that hasn't covered since September the 24th. You got to go all the way back to the Arkansas game, team that's 0-7-1 against the number their last 8 games. I usually like playing on those teams in bowl games. You get a reset for a struggling team, and they were banged up. Let's face it, Trevor Knight was beat up and injured, and their All-American defensive end, Miles Garrett, was banged up most of the season. He said he's going to play. Knight's going to play, so a healthier team. Don't like going up against Kansas State too often, but, boy, I think A&M is clearly a more talented team. And doing my checklist, I actually came up with Texas A&M by 5. So anything under a field goal, I'm actually going to lay it with Texas A&M. And keep in mind, they're only playing 100 miles away from campus, so they're also going to have the crowd edge in this one as well.
Yeah, we all know Texas A&M with the 12th man there, Kyle Field. I believe that's now the biggest stadium in college football since they did some renovations. So, you know, they certainly well represented at home. So I imagine that they should travel fairly well here, you know, in this interesting period between the holidays. How about we go to Thursday, touch on a couple of these games real quick. We'll touch on the two earlier ones so that we can talk about the Alamo Bowl on next week's show, which is actually one hell of a matchup and should be one of the most exciting bowl games of the postseason here. But South Florida and South Carolina, the Birmingham Bowl, obviously Willie Taggart going off to Oregon, something that seems like it could affect South Florida a little bit here in this spot.
Yeah, I'm going to have a big ticket on South Carolina, particularly at plus 10.5, anything above 10. I mean, but let's face it, a bowl handicapping 101, you got an interim coach for South Florida. Although I think the players are going to be excited, particularly about the future of the program with Charlie Strong being hired. But I like South Carolina. Let's face it, end of the year, they're playing more freshmen than any other team in the country, and yet those freshmen get 15 bowl practices. South Carolina exceeded expectations. I don't know that a lot of people had them in a bowl game this year. They obviously, the move to the freshman quarterback, Bentley, proved dividends. They won several games in a row. Now look, they have a lot to be desired. They're only going to get better. At least they'll be better next year under Muschamp. Getting 10.5, I mean, a group of five team favored by double digits in a bowl game over a power five team hasn't happened since 2011, and that's Boise State. So that was when they were rocking and rolling there, and you can almost throw that one out. So hasn't happened too often. I'm on the disrespected SEC team. That's excited to be there. That's the big thing here. It's not like South Carolina had a disappointing season. They are excited to be here. They're a young team that's only going to – I think they're going to show more improvement out of the two teams. So, yeah, I'll have a significant ticket on South Carolina plus the 10.5.
Well, and as most of our listeners know, my fiance is from South Carolina, so I follow a lot of their games. I've watched a lot of their games. Of course, I watched the game against Clemson, and that was not this South Carolina defense. I mean, they just got – I think that they couldn't get up to speed in that game. They had played Western Carolina before that. They played Florida, Missouri. None of those teams were all that strong. Then they run into a buzzsaw in Clemson, and they couldn't get their footing in that game. That was a pretty misleading game as far as I'm concerned, given the full season body of work for this Gamecocks defense. So there's some major disrespect in this line, like you said.
There is, and let's face it, though, South Florida's gotten a lot of respect from the odds makers for majority of this season. I mean, this was a team that was, you know, only a 4.5-point underdog to Florida State. They've laid some substantial numbers here. Keep in mind, they're also off a misleading game where they got an unbelievable cover against Central Florida where all they had to do was take a knee. Literally, there was no play clock on. All they had to do was just not even run a play even, and yet they scored a touchdown to get a cover against Central Florida. They're unbelievable offensively, and that's probably why the number's in double digits. Everyone remembers what they saw Clemson do, that South Carolina defense. But, you know, I don't want to be laying double digits against an SEC team when you look at their performances defensively. 46 points allowed to Temple, 45 to Navy, 42 to Memphis, and even 27 to SMU and 31 to Central Florida. Not a great-looking defense. I'll just come out and say it. South Carolina's one of my favorite bowl plays of the entire bowl season.
One more game I want to touch on here for the college side, then we'll flip over to the NFL for a few minutes. This bowl game probably has the best Twitter account out there, the Belk Bowl. This one between Arkansas and Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech laying a touchdown here against an SEC team. The Hokies were really, really strong during the regular season. Kind of maybe faded a little bit at times, but Justin Fuente should have this team ready to go, right?
He should. I just think this is a very high variance game. I would not be stunned if Virginia Tech won in a blowout. Would not be stunned if Arkansas won the game outright and won in blowout fashion. I mean, two very Jekyll and Hyde teams. I mean, you look at Arkansas alternating, you know, ATS wins and losses in each of their last six games. You know, they pull an outright upset over Ole Miss. They get crushed 56-3 to Auburn. They're a dog at home against Florida. They crush them 31-10. Then they're a dog against LSU. They get crushed 38-10. Then they turn right around. They're a dog at Mississippi State. They win by 16. Then they're laying over a touchdown, get outright upset against Missouri. So a very Jekyll and Hyde team. I do it. I mean, if you're just following the alternated wins and losses, you're going to get an A effort out of Arkansas in this game. On the flip side, Virginia Tech's also a team that, I mean, they got wins like 49-0 over Boston College, 34-3 over North Carolina. It's a team that blew out their rival 52-10. And then You know, they're a two-touchdown favorite against Georgia Tech, lose outright. They're a three-touchdown favorite over Syracuse, lose outright. It's a team that was getting beat by Notre Dame by 17 points. They rally to win. They're getting absolutely crushed by Clemson in the ACC championship game. They rally to almost win that game outright as a huge dog. Don't know if I can trust either team with a high variance. I'm going to have an Arkansas ticket. I'm going to be honest with you. When I'm in doubt, I'm going to take the dog. And I would not be stunned if Arkansas won this game outright. So, yeah, I will take Arkansas plus the 7.
We'll move over to the NFL side here, and really no need for a pick six because we just talked about a ton of bowl games on the college football side, and we'll do that again on next week's segment as well. But for me, as I look over this NFL card for week 16 here, I think this is by far the hardest card of the season to try and decipher because you have almost everybody playing on a short week. You've got games where one team has nothing to play for, one team has everything to play for in terms of the playoffs. Saw a few of those games last week work out the way we expected. Saw some where the team that had everything to play for no-showed. What's your overall take on this week's card?
Yeah, I agree. I had a tough time coming out with – I like giving out, as far as my newsletter, 3 plays a week, and I struggled. There's no question about it. Usually I have, you know, 2 or 3 slam dunks, and I got to be honest with you. You know, it was tough. Not that I'm not confident in the picks, but – usually, I mean, I got 5 picks I really like, and I usually keep a couple in waiting for waiting later in the week because I think I'm going to be catching extra line value, but I'm exactly right. When you have performances, you think you got everything figured out, and then you see the Monday night game with Washington with everything to play for, no shows, so that's tough. Unique schedule, obviously short week, Christmas Eve. How do the teams handle that? How do the teams on the road handle all the travel, and how do the teams at home handle the distraction of playing on Christmas Eve? We're all human beings and have families. So very tough week to handicap. I just go into line value power ratings, and look, every single week there is some guesswork to be had as far as if you think a team's motivated or not. And that's what I kind of leaned on as far as this week. I like playing on teams with a little bit more need. And I'm trying to judge the excitement level.
One of my favorite things about this industry is trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together because you have all the pieces there in front of you. You have all the stats. You have the betting lines. You have percentages of money and tickets. You can see what's the sharp side, what's the public side, all that type of thing. And as I'm compiling all this information for this week in the NFL, there are some things that still just – I'm not going to say they don't make sense to me because I can almost always justify something one way or another, but – there are some moves this week in the NFL, the move down on Indianapolis, the move up on Tennessee. You've got steady stream of Atlanta money coming in against Carolina, just all kinds of things that are going on out here in the market this week that sort of, I don't want to say perplex me necessarily, but just, I don't know. Something seems off about this entire card this weekend with all the line moves and the stuff that's going on.
Yeah, I'll throw another one. And I'd like to get your take. Because obviously I'm more of a college football guy first and foremost, so I like different varying opinions on the NFL. But I was a little surprised that the Houston line drops because, to me, I upgrade them with Savage at quarterback. I think that's at least a 1.5-point upgrade for them. Showed a lot of excitement off a misleading game. I'm not sure what – I mean, I get it that they could lose this game and win next week and still be fine, but – you know, if that's the case, I worry about Cincinnati's motivation, a team that had a 2-touchdown lead over their rival. That was their Super Bowl. They blew it. They're out of the playoff picture. I know they're getting A.J. Green back, but you can't tell me he's worth 2 points to the line, a wide receiver. I don't understand that line move. I'll agree with you some of the – you know, I get the Atlanta. They're off back-to-back blowout wins. But, I mean, if Carolina's on their game, it's still a team that hasn't given up on the season. Keep in mind, they've had, you know, I think the narrative was written on them, obviously a tough start. And then at the end of the season, the blowout loss on Sunday Night Football against Seattle really, you know, made them to have some value here in the last couple of weeks in their games. And, you know, if that line is 3, and it looks like it'll probably go there with the public betting percentages, value on Carolina. I'm not afraid of Houston, believe it or not, at the current 1. I mean, they're telling me that Cincinnati in that case is the much better team. I don't think that. I think even without J.J. Watt, I think it's still one of the better defenses in the National League and National Football League. And when you have a quarterback that can finally throw the football down the field. I mean, you got Will Fuller. You got, in my opinion, a top five wide receiver in the league in DeAndre Hopkins. You can finally, you know, get the ball to your playmakers. I think that's a team to watch out for. So, yeah, I agree with you. There's some line moves that I don't quite fully understand, several point line moves. And I guess I get Tennessee. But, again, I can't believe – I guess the Sharps are going to ride it out and see how high that goes. But usually there's a boost with an interim coach in Jacksonville. So we'll see if that's going to be the case as far as their performance this week.
That Cincinnati-Houston game is a really great example. That's one I should have brought up because, like you said, I mean, that's their game last week. And, I mean, they played very well in the first half, and then all of a sudden Pittsburgh flipped the switch. But Cincinnati had 38 yards in the second half of that game. So now they're on the road at Houston, and Cincinnati is really banged up. A.J. Green still limited in practice. Vontaze Burfict, he had concussion protocol. Tyler Eifert still dinged up again. Jeremy Hill. I mean, it's late in the year. And now you're traveling out on the road on a short week, and you have to go play a game that you don't necessarily care about after blowing a 2-touchdown lead at home. That is definitely, I think, the most eye-opening line move here of the week. And I don't know. I mean, do you think we start to see some Houston buyback from sharp players, or is this all sharp money driving the market? I don't know.
Sharp money's been against Houston all year. Keep in mind, I mean, Houston last week got, you know, they were like 5.5. And that line against Jacksonville was 3.5. So they basically said on a neutral field, maybe Houston is 1 point better than Jacksonville. They didn't cover. But if you watch the game, I mean, they outgained Jacksonville by 230 yards. I mean, it was more, you know, Osweiler threw a couple of very bad picks early. They got down. But once Savage got in there, you saw the potential. I mean, this guy was 23 out of 36, was throwing the ball down the field. And the boost from an emotional aspect and a locker room aspect. I mean, let's face it. There had to be some discontent in the locker room when you got a $70 million guy that is mediocre at best, and not even that. That's a disparity in the word mediocre in Osweiler. I got to think now you got a guy that's on everyone else's level, similar to, you know, Brian Hoyer. Look, am I going to back Houston with Tom Savage at quarterback in a playoff game? No, but a regular season game at home against a team not motivated? I don't know if you're going to see it just because I've seen so much money against Houston in recent weeks. I'm not surprised too much in that regard, but boy, I'll just be upfront. I like Houston a lot. And boy, anything under 3, they're a definite play, and they'll be on my card late in the week.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that I could talk football and talk betting with Brad Powers all day long, but I think it's in your best interest that we let you go and let you catch up with everything that you got going on there. But Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com, what do you have going on over at the website right now?
Yeah, we cover each and every bowl game, a third of the page write-up, all the bowl different stats, all their ATS logs, full game write-ups, and a pick on every single bowl game. I am like Joe Public when it comes to the bowl season. I like having action on every one of the bowl games. Obviously, I rate plays much stronger than others, but you can get every single remaining of the bowl picks, 33 of them, and you can get 2 weeks left of the regular season, all the NFL action. It's the Powers Picks newsletter. Lifetime percentage the last couple of years, 57% on every single NFL and college pick. Get it now for the rest of the season, $39, BradPowersSports.com.
At Brad Powers, the number 7 on Twitter. Brad, as always, man, thank you so much. Merry Christmas, happy holidays to you and yours, and I'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, right back at you, my friend. Take care. Happy holidays to you.
A lot of excellent stuff there with Brad Powers. And again, if you want to play any of those bowl games we talked about, we covered a lot of them. DSI Sportsbook, our Bang the Book radio listeners can use the promo code BTBRadio. That'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up. An additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. Maybe you want to get an account over at DSI to bet some college basketball. We're going to get some college basketball tips here from Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. Ralph, sorry for keeping you on hold so long, man, but thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
I know it's tough to get Brandon to get Brad to shut up, so I understand that totally. One quick note to finish your guys' conversation going back into the NFL. You know, Osweiler was outplayed in the preseason and during the regular season and practices. I think they were forced to play him because of his salary, but the better quarterback is now playing for Houston this week.
Well, and I know that you handicap largely from a situational mindset, and we sort of talked about it a little bit there at the end, you know, with Tom Savage and the fact that, you know, it's something different. As you said, he's been the better practice player, and it seemed like you know, the emotions kind of changed a little bit for Houston. So is that something that you do look to play on across the sports markets when you notice a tendency like that?
You know, there's certain players that your team will rally behind, and there's certain players that the team goes through the motion. I think Osweiler's been resented on that team the entire year. He never took the leadership mold. He's never that guy to get in the scuffle. He's never the guy to go down and bang heads to get that first down. And Savage is a player, you know, coming from Rutgers that no one thought he would be here. And all of a sudden, he'll take that dive. He'll take that hit. He'll not go out of bounds. And I think that does rally a team.
Well, and let's sort of apply that a little bit to the college basketball side of things then, because, you know, this is a league where you've got a pretty big disparity between what you're like as a freshman and what you're like as a senior. You do a lot of growing up. If you stick around for 4 years, you get a lot more familiar with the coaching. You get a lot more familiar with how to handle yourself as a player. So is that something that you look to play on or against in college basketball when, say, you know, maybe a senior leader goes down as opposed to, you know, the star freshman?
Well, you know, there's going to be a few teams that we knock out of the mix. Kentucky has their ones and dones, and they're getting the creme de la creme. So those freshmen can play no matter what. They've been through prep schools. They've been through their AAUs. They're playing, you know, in other countries when they're – absolutely. There are certainly teams that are senior-based teams, and this NBA draft is going to be a rare one where we're going to see as many upperclassmen drafted in the top 15 picks as we do underclassmen. It could be the last time in a long time, but when you have a building team with a multi-year point guard, especially, or a senior captain who perhaps is a shooting guard who's involved in almost every play, it certainly can help your team gel.
Well, and we talk a lot about some of those instances where players do go out, and I know that, you know, we've had a couple of guests here that sort of talk about what they refer to as the superstar subtraction theory. And it's something that they largely use, you know, for NBA purposes, because the NBA is a pretty individually based league. But, you know, when a star player goes out, there's sort of that one game rallying point where everybody kind of goes, okay, I have to do a little bit more. And then it's a matter of how sustainable that becomes. Maybe they do rally in that first game, then sort of fall off a little bit in the second, third, and fourth game, that type of thing. Have you noticed any sort of trend like that in college basketball with any teams here this year? Because there are some teams that have had a lot of injury problems.
You know what? It's not as noticeable to me, because with college basketball, you're looking at so many games, so many different nights. You know, I don't have any specific instances, but I can tell you certainly in college football, we look at the injury system all the time. A star player quarterback goes down, that first day you get a bounce back, then you get reality setting in. And you got to remember, when a star player goes out, the team has prepped for that offense, for that defense, with that player involved in the systems. So they're seeing something different for the first time. And then their opponents can catch up, having watched film or tape or game or viewing that game, to see how to analyze the team moving forward.
Well, I sent you a list of talking points here for this week's show, which is something I absolutely should have done last week. I mean, last week was a good segment, but, you know, that was some host error on my part to not have you a little bit more prepared. That was certainly on me. But there were a few things I wanted to talk about here on today's show. And, of course, we only have 2 days of college basketball here really to talk about, Thursday and Friday, because then there's a holiday break. A lot of teams start conference play late next week. Other teams start it after the new year. So only a couple of days worth of games to look at. But when we had you on last week, you talked a lot about situational handicapping for college basketball. And I was hoping that you could isolate a few games here over the next couple of days that illustrate some of those things that you're looking for.
Well, you know what? We all watched, or we all were aware, that Louisville played Kentucky. Now, I'm going to look at that from two instances. First, from the Kentucky standpoint, last week we saw them in probably the college basketball game of the year, beat North Carolina in Las Vegas. Well, last night was Kentucky's first true road game of the year. We saw them struggle a little bit more. We saw Malik Monk score 47 points against North Carolina, scored 16 last night, shooting 1 of 9 from three-pointers. So you're going to find some teams that have not played any difficult competition on the road, as Kentucky did last night in their first road game. But I'll tell you what, Louisville probably has the toughest schedule to finish off this year. heart and soul. If you live in Kentucky, you circle two games, you circle 2 days on your calendar to start the year. First Saturday in May for the Derby, and when Louisville and Kentucky play basketball. So imagine Louisville up for that game last night, winning against their rival for the first time in five tries. Then they have Virginia coming up December 28th, who is one of the top three or four defensive teams in the country, who went out to Cal last night and beat them. Then they go to Indianapolis to play Indiana on December 31st, New Year's Eve. And then they open at Notre Dame December 4th. So while we're looking at Kentucky off a first road game, let's look at Louisville in a letdown situation, playing a great defensive squad coming up in a few days. Another situation I'm going to look at is, you know, teams that are traveling from one side of the country to back. It's rare for a team to fly in one instance. And, you know, I'm going to use this as an example last night. I didn't use the play. And just because if you find a situation, it doesn't mean it always works. Western Michigan last night played UCLA. We're going to talk about UCLA in a bit as one of my overrated teams. And I wanted to play against UCLA, but Western Michigan was making a long road trip. They had travel situations, which happen now often in basketball when you're having to make connections. Western Michigan, it took them 14 hours to get out there to UCLA. So it was a game I wanted to play against UCLA. I didn't because of Western Michigan flying across the country. But that's something I look at now, especially during this Christmas week. Teams are making very bizarre road trips just to play one game.
I want to circle back to Louisville for a second here because they have that game against Virginia, and then they play Indiana. And those are two very, very different styles of teams. Of course, Virginia is going to slow the game down. They're going to make you use as much of the shot clock as they possibly can because they play at a slow pace. They play a lot of great defense. Indiana is the complete opposite. If Indiana can get out and run, they want to get out and run. So when you've got back-to-back games there, and of course it helps that these are two premier opponents, but when you have back-to-back games against teams that play extremely different styles of basketball, is that a situational angle that you look to focus on?
Well, you know, I'm going to say that between these three games, you look at the importance Louisville has. And yes, I certainly do look at that. Kentucky fast-paced, Indiana fast-paced, both are rivals that are only a few hours away that they play every year. Virginia is the odd team out. Virginia is not an annual opponent. Virginia is a completely different paced team. So if I'm going to look to play against Louisville, it's going to be this one time against Virginia because of the different scheme they have. And tempo is something I look at all the time. If you're playing fast tempo teams and all of a sudden you can play someone that plays defense, it really can cause havoc in your offensive schemes.
Well, I think one thing that's also interesting about this Virginia game, you know, with it being the home conference opener for Louisville, they'll have to play Virginia again on February 6th. So when you see what happens in this home game, when you see what happens with the line action, the opener, the closer, you know, what the sharp side is, you start writing down some notes for that game on February 6th, don't you?
Well, you do. And, you know, let me give you another example. You're looking at situations. You're looking at how teams react from one team to the next. But an example, I was just watching SportsCenter this morning. You know, and if you saw that UMass Lowell hit a three-pointer after the buzzer on a miraculous shot and it didn't count, that's something that goes in my notes for next time, off a very disappointing loss where they had to check the tape if it's a situation where they won or lost. So you are going to look at those situations all the time. The other notes that you take down are how teams react off a disappointment or a great game. An example we're going to use again coming up here, we'll go ahead and jump to it a little before a notice, but UMass was playing North Carolina AT&T. It wasn't a line game. They were probably a 30-point favorite. They were down at halftime, and they came back and won by six. The next week out, the team rallied, and they covered easily in that game. So you certainly are taking notes from one game or one situation or one type of team as well.
Did you have any other spots you were looking for here in the short term, or did you want to get over to those teams that are a little bit over and a little bit undervalued?
Well, it's going to be mixed in, so let's go ahead and talk about those, and there's going to be some situations I'll talk about when we're talking about those teams, so we're not jumping back and forth on that.
All right, sounds good. Let's go with the overvalued side first here and look at some of the teams that, you know, as I talked about in the lead into the segment here, late next week and then early the following week, a lot of teams start off conference play. There are some teams that have played very, very difficult non-conference schedules. Others have played a middle-of-the-road schedule, and some have played effectively nobody here at this stage of the game. So who are you looking at as an overvalued team heading into conference play?
You know what, I'm going to go out on a limb a little bit, and I'm going to say UCLA. I'm not a fan of Steve Alford's. You know, granted what he did at Iowa, granted what he did at New Mexico, but, you know, he took over a team, got UCLA to 20-9 with the talent that was there, dropped down to 22-14 his second year, and he had a lot of talent on last year's team, and they went 15-7. Now they're 12-0. They've only played one road game. Granted, it was a win against Kentucky, and that puts them at a different level. And I think that now is a great time to play against them. They played the number 205 schedule. When you get into conference play, it's much more physical. They want to run the ball. And, you know, I think even though they have four returning starters, I'm going to look to play against UCLA. As I mentioned, they didn't cover last night against Western Michigan. And I'm also going to throw another Pac-12 undefeated team in there, USC. USC gets off to these fast starts. Now, they've had a couple injuries, but I think both of those Pac-12 teams are overrated, and I don't see them winning the Pac-12 or finishing in the top one or two.
One thing I do want to mention to our listeners here, when we talk about overvalued, we're obviously not expecting these teams to go out and rattle off a bunch of straight-up losses, but we're talking about against the spread where perception may trump reality, so to speak. And, you know, the interesting thing about both UCLA and USC that you mentioned there, they have that Oregon double where they play Oregon State and Oregon in back-to-back games on the road, one in Corvallis, one in Eugene. That's something that we've seen trip up some of these California teams before.
Well, you always make that double trip. And, you know, and Oregon's the key up there. You know, it's Oregon I still have as the top team, and they're working out some issues now. But you're right. UCLA is a team that, when I say overrated, granted, when you start 12-0, you're going to have a winning season. But I think the perception of them, because of their Kentucky win, will put them up and will give you at least 2, 3, or 4 points of line value for the next 2 or 3 weeks in that situation.
Any other overvalued teams that you're looking at here?
You know what, I'm gonna say that it's hard to say when a team is picked eighth in their division, they're overrated. But South Florida continues to get love, and I don't understand their lines. They were supposed to return their top three returning scorers. Rodney Peters was dismissed in the summer. Chris Perry was dismissed a week and a half ago. And then Jamal McMurray, their best player, led the team in scoring last year, was suspended the first 6 games this year, averaged 20 points per game the next 3 games, and then he left the team 2 days ago and said he's transferring. So all of a sudden, you have a team now that you go from returning your top 3 scorers to losing them and losing them recently. It's a team that I'm going to fade pretty quick. And when you have multiple players like that leaving the team, there's obviously something deeper going on that is not getting that is not noted publicly, but we'll see what occurs with them.
One more game for South Florida in the non-conference part of the season here. They play Delaware tonight, then they kick things off in the American Athletic Conference. What do you think of the American Athletic Conference for this year? I mean, are there some teams that can really take advantage of that situation that South Florida's facing?
Well, again, South Florida was supposed to be picked last or second last in that conference. So, you know, I'm not going to go out of the mold. You know, a lot of people pick Connecticut to win that division, and they're another team that's struggling, and they have their own issues. So I think it leaves it wide open for Cincinnati. And, you know, Houston just got blown out the other night as well. It's very wide open. Temple was picked bottom of, you know, about seventh or eighth out of the 11 teams in there. I see SMU, Cincinnati rising to the top, and I think Cincinnati has the easiest way to go of probably almost any division leader right now with what's occurred in that division.
One other team that lost its top three scorers from last year, and the only reason I know this is because I wrote this game up in a preview for bangthebook.com today, is Hawaii. They take on Illinois State tonight, and that's why we've seen some money come in on the Redbirds, who, of course, have that very long trip out to Honolulu. Any other overvalued teams that you're looking at?
You know what? I'm gonna jump out and, you know, besides the two Pac-12 teams, I think Maryland continues to not play the way they should with one of the best players in the country in Melo Trimble. So they're a team that has a superstar, had a superstar last year, couldn't make it work, and they just don't continue to play cohesive ball where when they get behind, they seem to fall apart. Maryland's a team that when they're the better team, they'll bully a team, but when they're against equal competition or things don't go their way, you see them to start make more and more mistakes. So they're a team I'm going to look at. If they're a double-digit favorite in the right situation, I don't mind playing them. If they're not, I'll look to fade them.
Well, let's move over to the undervalued side here, because these are things that, you know, can kind of be a little bit of a long-term look, especially if they're in some of the under-the-radar conferences, because oddsmakers just have so much to worry about with college basketball, so they're not nearly as quick to adjust in college hoops as they are in all of the other leagues. But who would you say is the most undervalued team here as we approach conference play?
Right now, I like Utah. And Utah's about a team that's in the 60s to 80s in most people's rankings. And one thing we're going to look at is, you know, now I'm going to translate this for those that follow football more than basketball. When you get to these bowls, grades are now posted. The semesters have ended. You see players suspended for not making grades. Well, on the flip side, those players that transferred to a team mid-season or the beginning of last year are now eligible. Utah has two players that just became eligible last game. David Collette, a 6'8 player, a transfer from Utah State, points, 9 rebounds his last game. Cedric Bearfield, an SMU transfer, had 18 points. I think Utah is now a very solid Pac-12 team. Again, a great home court edge as well, and they're a team that's going to surprise some people in the Pac-12.
And
another one is
– I think especially with what Utah lost last year with Jakob Poeltl going to the draft, and, you know, sometimes you think of these programs that, you know, maybe have been down a little bit over the last decade as a whole. They lose a player like that in the first round, and people think all of a sudden it's time to sell stock in them, but – Krystowiak's one of the best coaches in the country, certainly one of the best in this conference. And you mentioned two transfers there. I think that that's a really, really strong team to look at right out of the gate here.
And, you know, again, you know, Utah opened up 6-2, so they weren't horrible, but they played one of the weakest schedules. So although their record is solid, they're not getting any love from the Vegas sports books. And again, that's a great situation for us.
All right, so
another
who's your next
team that I'm going to go to the ACC, and again, we're looking at a team that's 10-1, but when they get in the conference play, they're going to be in the bottom two-thirds of the conference, and that's Virginia Tech. They were 11-22 2 years ago, 20-15 last year, and they got to the NIT. I love Buzz Williams. I'll tell you what, his third year at Marquette, he got Marquette to the Sweet 16, and I think Virginia Tech's ready to take that level. They don't play the defense that Marquette did, but they're an upper-paced team. They've got great guard play. They're a team that has gelled together, and it's a team that I think is going to perhaps pull an upset of, you know, some of those upper echelon teams. When you have to go to Blacksburg and play a basketball game, it's not an easy trip to make.
Well, they get Duke on New Year's Eve, but before that, they play UMBC. Is that a fade spot for Virginia Tech on the 28th with that look ahead to Duke, or do you feel like, you know, Buzz Williams can get this team in the right mindset?
You know, well, right now, I think having not made the tournament, he can get them motivated to know that every potential win is a positive, and that's something you look at. If you were a team that's been to the tournament the last 2 or 3 years, perhaps it's a tougher situation, but you've shown these kids We didn't make any postseason play. We went to the NIT. We're ready for the next step. Prove it at home tonight. Don't look forward to Duke.
All right, so who's next on the undervalued list?
You know what? Those are the two teams that circle out for me. You know, there's a couple that I have in the mid-range that don't get national publicity, but I think are Final Four type teams. Purdue's one of them. You know, and Purdue's a team that some people picked them in the Big Ten. They picked Wisconsin. You know, it's such a split Big Ten play. But I still think there's value on playing Purdue. I mean, I think they have the best player in the country, Kalib Swanigan. You know, to give you an example of what he's done this year, there's been five games in the entire college basketball season where players have had 20-20s, 20 rebounds and 20 points. He has three of them already. He's averaging a double-double. He's a player that you can go to. And that's the important thing when you get the conference play. When you're in a conference game on the road at Indiana or on the road at Wisconsin, can you give the ball to one person and you know that he can put the ball into the hole? And, you know, I think that's why, you know, Chris Dunn last year, an example, was such an important player, because you put the ball in his hands and he can score. And, you know, he took that team to the next level. And I think Swanigan's that same type of player where he can take them there.
Who was the other one in that mid-range that you were referring to?
You know, it was Cincinnati. We talked about them earlier. I love their pressing. I love their pressing defense. I think they have enough offense this year. Normally, you know, Cincinnati is a team that, you know, makes the tournament, wins a game, perhaps wins two games. But I think their run this year, with their depth that they have, you know, they only returned two starters, but they returned a player that was injured. They played a lot of guys last year with a lot of minutes. And I think Cincinnati is a team that, you know, last year went 12-6 in the conference, had 22 wins. I think they're ready to take it to the next level.
Strong insights today from Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. Ralph, what's going on over there at the website right now?
You know what? We talked about a special, and we talked about doing some plays and, you know, how well. And I want people to know, if you give out a free day of service and you go 3-0, you're not the best handicapper and you're 0-3, I have a special Christmas offer to your customers. You know, a 10-day period gives someone a fair assessment of how you're handicapped in college basketball. And I am going to offer the next 10 days of service from today through December 31st for $25. It's really 8 days of service because of Christmas and New Year's. If you have any interest, shoot me an email, calsports@aol.com. I'll be glad to get back to you. 10 days of service, really 8 days of action, $25. Adam, if I got 1 second, I'd like to walk through one play, which I will be using tonight, how I got there. If we don't have time, no issue.
Absolutely, go for it.
This game will be on my board tonight. We talked about how do you handicap college basketball. I'm going to look at Massachusetts and Rider. Why do I look at it? Well, I'll tell you what. One of the statistical matchups I love are teams that force turnovers against team that turn over the ball. UMass forcing 17.4 turnovers and 9.4 steals per game. Rider number 250 allowing 14.5 turnovers per game. Statistically, you look at UMass, 7-1 straight up at home, 2-1 ATS. I'm happy with that. Rider, 4-2 on the road, only 1-2 ATS. They played a very weak schedule. Situationally, UMass, home for a second straight game. Next game, not until 7 days off, and it's Georgia State, no issue. Rider, playing a second straight road game. Situation favors me. Let's look at revenge. Do I have to worry about, did we pull an upset against this team, or did we do something to cause them to miss the tournament? No. Last game, 2010, UMass has covered 4 straight. Set of the papers, anything in the Springfield Union News? Well, we know that UMass played a close game a couple games ago, bounced back. 3 freshmen had huge games. UMass has LaJuan Pipkins, a freshman point guard. He's the only player in the country to have at least 7 steals in 2 games this year. He's going to cause havoc to the backcourt of Rider. Line is reasonable. I like UMass tonight. It will be on my card as a star-rated play.
That's perfect. I really like that you walk people through the steps that you take there to make your college basketball picks. Ralph Michaels, as he said, Kelsports at AOL.com, $25 for service through the end of 2016. You certainly have to love that. But Ralph, really appreciate your time as always, man. Thanks so much. Can people find you on Twitter?
You know what? It's KelsportsLV.
Well, there you go. Ralph, happy holidays to you and yours, man. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week, bud.
Happy holidays to all your listeners. Have a great new year. Thank you.
Well, good segment there. And I like that at the end, throwing out a free pick, showing us how he breaks down the college basketball card. So I said earlier in the show, coming up on Friday, Westgate Super Contest selection segment with myself and Cole Ryan. The second week of the mini contest here. So we'll update the progress on that. Also, update how things look overall for the final 2 weeks here of the Super Contest. Picks due in a little bit earlier here with all the Saturday games. So since we use a proxy, not living out there in Nevada, we have to get our card finalized a little bit earlier, which means maybe we will have all five plays for that segment. Not entirely sure. But then also the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Lots of stuff to talk about here with the bowl games and, of course, a very intriguing NFL card for Saturday. A reminder that next week we'll have Joe Everett on Monday. No Kyle Hunter on Monday. I'll figure out something for that Monday segment. But we'll have a full hour with Kyle Hunter of HunterSportsPicks.com on Tuesday's show. So that'll be our college football first look. Also, our handicapping the hardwood segment. So brief change there. Have to accommodate for people that are, you know, out and about doing things for the holidays. But, you know, looking as of now that we should be able to bring you all 5 days of Bang the Book Radio next week. And we've got to get ready for those semifinal games as well. Apologies to umpire Tony, who I know asked a question on Twitter. I will get thoughts on that. I promise you. Probably have to wait until next week's show, or you can reach out to any of the handicappers on Twitter. But sorry that I overlooked your question, bud. Thank you for always listening. Really appreciate that. So thank you to everybody for listening here today, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.